On February 8th, the year 2000, The Meaning of Life was auctioned off on eBay. The phrase was, "I have discovered the reason for our existence and would be happy to share this information with the highest bidder." After 8 bids, it was sold for $3.26, which probably explains why God made us with 46 chromosomes and sweet potatoes with 48. We have phrases about buckets, lots of phrases about buckets. There's a hole in the bucket, and sometimes we say the person kicked the bucket. Kick the bucket is a phrase that we use for the person expiring or dying. And there's a phrase that we have this morning that's called bucket list. I spent 2 evenings this week watching the movie Bucket List. I've laughed a little, I've cried a little, and I've stolen a little. The movie is about 2 men, very different men, who find themselves in a hospital room being treated for cancer. Relationship is far from what you would call ordinary. They're very different fellows, the way they think, and their occupations, their station in life, etc. But they find themselves drawn together by one thing, and that is some doctor walked into both of them and said, "You have 6 months to 12 months to live." And as they're sitting there trying to figure out what all this means, they decide that they're going to make a list. A list of things that they want to do before they die. Now remember, they only have 6 to 12 months. Last Sunday night, I was on the Speak at Vandalia, and I took the first 5 or 10 minutes, and I asked all of my people that were there to write a bucket list. We'll go through some of those as we go through this talk. They were kind of squeezed for time, so I'm sure it would have gotten even more had we given them more time. But the bucket list is a list of things that you would do if you had 6 months to live, unlimited funds, and no other obligations. What would you do? What makes this tough is the limited time part. That's what makes it tough. You know, in my profession, unfortunately, I frequently get to tell people that they have an illness that they're probably going to die from. Usually the smart doctors don't say 6 to 12 months because we're really bad at predicting. Really bad. But we'll say, this is probably terminal. And sometimes we get to tell people that they're going to live. And I get impressed quite frequently on how tough we really are physically. Any of you who have seen a baby born understands how tough the human body is, but how very, very frail we are. How little of a change it makes for us to not be here. How little something has to be off for you not to work. Spend time with family. Own a convertible and ride at the top down. These are all from my list. Visit all Major League Baseball stadiums. Learn a foreign language. Travel to foreign lands. Why is it necessary to make this list? Because you are going to die. You are going to die. I told John McNeese when I met him coming in this morning that I wasn't sure I even liked this talk because it's very necessary, it's very difficult to make what we generally consider a very negative thing positive. You are going to die. I'm not talking just old folks. You are going to die. Death is the ultimate limitation placed in our life. It's guaranteed termination. Guaranteed, every one of us. The Bible speaks of this. Life is a vapor. Life is just a step between you and death. Our days on earth are a shadow, and there's none abiding. Life is like the wind. In Psalms, David said, "Lord, make me to know how frail I am." But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Those are negative things. And in fact, if we lived our lives scared of that all the time, it would be very, very, very negative. But understanding that our life is limited can help our quality of life. This morning, I'll ask you to do several exercises as we go through here, but I want you to take your age, and some of you are going to cheat and come up with a negative number. So I want you to take your age and subtract it from 80. So I'm 58, okay? Not quite, but close. I won't tell you how close. 58, 22 years, okay? If I sleep 8 hours a night over the next year, which is doubtful, but if I slept 8 hours a night over the next year, I would spend 122 days out of this next year sleeping. If I spend 1 hour a day eating breakfast, lunch, and supper, which is really doubtful, but if I did, that would be 46 days a year. I would have spent half of the next year sleeping and eating. 22 divided by half, 11 years ago. Okay. 11 years. I haven't done any shopping. I haven't paid any bills. I haven't done any personal grooming, which Lord knows I need. I haven't done any traveling to and from work. I haven't done any life maintenance issues. I haven't done anything else. And half my life's already gone. What do you have left? That's if you live to be 80. What if it isn't 80? What if it's 70? What if it's 60? You are going to die. Sometimes we find ourselves just going through the motions of life. During the movie of Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend the movie, it has some language in it, a couple of references that aren't really right, but the overall thought is good. During the movie, Jack apologizes to Morgan Freeman, I guess their characters are Edwin and Carter, apologize him for talking him into going out and doing all these crazy things that they did, because on their bucket list they had skydiving, first of all. Skydiving. Well, Carter reacts the same way I would. I'll go down when the plane goes down, okay? Not before, okay? They do skydiving. They go through the African nation with all the animals singing the jungle song. They drive a Shelby Mustang at over 200 miles an hour. I might get into that one. They ride a motorcycle on the Great Wall. They go to see the mountains of the Himalayas. In a way, Edwin asked Carter, why did you talk me into this? And Carter said, you didn't. You're good, but you're not that good. Because I got to thinking that there's something wrong, because my wife and I raised three kids, and they grew up, and they moved out, and there wasn't homework to do, there wasn't Little League to go to, there wasn't skin knees to take care of, and I found myself looking at her, Carter says, and he said, I couldn't figure out why I didn't feel the same, because I could remember when I couldn't walk down the street without holding her hand. Couldn't think of walking down the street without learning. Something has changed. Time limitations changes our perceptions. If we rent a jet ski, and you're out on the ocean, and I rent it to you for 30 minutes, that jet ski is going to be running for 30 and a half minutes. Because you will run it until I tell you to bring it in, and then you'll run it in. You'll use your half minute to get in. But if I tell you, you have unlimited use of this jet ski, it will set. At least part of the time. Understanding that your life is limited helps us to live life with new vigor and passion if we will let it. It helps us to understand that we want everything that we can get out of life. The important things. It helps us to differentiate. Golf, exotic locations. Write letters to family expressing my love. Go to a NASCAR race. Write a journal of my thoughts and values to lead to my family. Ride in a helicopter. but I don't have unlimited time. I can't do everything. That's a problem. Mary and Martha had a little problem, and Jesus showed up. Jesus said, excuse me, Martha, but there are choices that have been made here. There are some choices that have been made here. Mary chose one thing, the better, and Martha chose something else. But choices were made, and you make choices every day, every single day. We call them priorities. You set priorities. And that's what the bucket list is about, because I only have 6 months. I only have 6 months for my bucket list. That falls off there, I'm dead. I only have 6 months for my bucket list. I can't do everything. And we have choices to be made. In Hebrews, Moses said he decided that he was going to make a choice. He could have been Pharaoh's daughter's son. He could have been Pharaoh's daughter's son. But he decided against it, to suffer the affliction with the people of God for a while. Choices are going to be made. Priorities are going to be set. Whether you want to or not, it really has nothing to do with it. You're going to do it. You're going to make choices. Whether they're good or not, I don't know. But you're going to make choices. You're going to set priorities. Good or bad. You are dying. Set them. Set them. Make your choices. Psychiatrist named Irvin Yalden, his name probably explains why he's a psychiatrist, did a study of terminal cancer patients. And the changes that happen in the behavior of people when you tell them you are going to die. And these should be true of us as a Christian. We should have understanding of this better than anybody else. Number one, a rearranging of life's priorities. Trivializing the trivial. Making the trivial, trivial. I waited all the way to that line to get rid of this thing. The trivial should be trivial. And we should be able to discern the difference. Number two, there's a sense of liberation. I'm able to choose to do those things I want to do. And not necessarily all the things you want me to do. And not necessarily the things I don't want to do. There's a sense of liberation. I only have 6 months here. Number three, there's an enhanced sense of living in the immediate present. All the scriptures in the Bible that talk about today. Today. Number four, we have a vivid appreciation of the elemental facts of life. Tell a person who can't breathe the value of one deep, clear breath that you and I take every day. Number five, we have a deeper communication with our loved ones. We tell them what we think. We don't wait. And number six, we have fewer interpersonal fears. There's less concerns about rejection. There's a greater willingness to take risks because I only have 6 months. You know, many, many years ago, Charles Dickens wrote The Christmas Carol. And Ebenezer Scrooge was a terrible old guy. And the three people, three angels or spirits or whatever they call them in the story, I can't quite remember, showed up and said, the first one said, I'm the one of past, okay? And Scrooge looked at it and he saw he used to have friends. He used to have a beautiful lady that loved him. But because of his greed, those were gone. And the second spirit showed up and he saw that he had been miserable to the people that worked for him. He didn't take care of them. He overworked them. Didn't care about them at all. Underpaid them. Saw Bob Cratchit that worked for him. Saw that Bob Cratchit's son, Tiny Tim, was terminally ill. Wouldn't have been, but he had no funds to get treatment. And that he had done nothing about it. And the future spirit showed Ebenezer Scrooge his death. Tiny Tim died too, but so did Scrooge. And nobody showed up to the funeral. And nobody cared. Why do I have to wait? Why do you have to wait? Until some doctor tells you you have 6 months to live. I am a doctor, 33 years. I'm glad you showed up today because I didn't want to tell you this over the phone. I've seen the symptoms before, the symptoms that you have that are not consistent with life. You need to set your affairs in order because you are going to die. Now you've been told by a doctor, okay? Now what's your excuse? Why do I have to wait to be told that? Why do I have to wait? When we start thinking about it, as it was in the movie, they did a lot of silly things. Maybe silly, maybe not. But when it came down to it, the things that mattered were relationships. That's what matters with us, our relationship with God and man. Our character, who I am, and who I want to be in life. What mattered was hope versus worry, or we call faith. Service, treating your neighbor as yourself and being a servant like Jesus, and joy. These are the important things that we come back to. All these other things are fun, interesting, and exciting, but these are the important things. Give my first lesson at church. Swim in a big bowl of Jell-O. Visit people who have been important to me in my life. Give next of kin my treasures. Own a horse. Go on an African safari. Make your list. Make your list. Make your list for 1 year. Make your list for 5 years. Make your list for 10 years. Make your list for the end of your life. Make the cockeyed list. Make it. Do it now. Do it now. I don't care if you're 10, 30, 50, 70, or above. Do it now. Because there's an urgency about this. You only have a little while to live. Do you understand? You are dying. You only have a little while to live. There's urgency involved here. The Marines call it carpe diem, seize the day. Seize the day. What's the opposite of urgency? Procrastination. That's the opposite of urgency. Felix says, maybe in a little more convenient season, when I've got a little more time, I'm not as hungry, and the meal's ready, and my wife's hollering at me, maybe if there's something there, maybe we'll get together again and we'll talk about this some more. As Matt told us here in a recent lesson, I'd never seen this before. Back when the plagues were on Egypt, and they had the plague of the frogs, and Moses went to Pharaoh, and he said, we can get rid of all these frogs. They're in your ovens, they're in your microwaves, they're in your beds, they're in your bathroom, they're everywhere. We can get rid of them. When do you want me to get rid of them? Tomorrow. Why tomorrow? Why not right now? Tomorrow. Amazing the things we'll put off. Why do we live boring lives doing the unimportant, the unimaginative, the unappreciated, and just downright depressing? Why do we do that? Because we're scared to death, scared of even thinking about it. Sometimes we get so busy that we keep ourselves so busy we don't have time to think about dying. Sometimes instant gratification gets in a road of real value. Sometimes I just postpone thinking about it. I think about tomorrow. Sometimes we in America think we'll outsmart it. Bill Cosby said in his book Time Flies that Americans spend over $1 billion a year on products, making themselves look so they'll be confused with their children instead of confused by their children. Yeah. Life-threatening situations change all that. When someone tells you, and you've been told, when someone tells you that you're going to die, you think differently. Do you think Paul was different because of all those close scrapes he had? You know, if you go to 2 Corinthians 11 chapter, verse 23 and 28, he lists just a few of the things he had. In deaths often, 40 stripes, save one, 5 times. One of those is enough to kill you. Beaten with rod 3 times, stoned and left for dead, shipwrecked 3 times. Do you think those had no effect on Paul? Do you think Paul's just a superhero that changes clothes in a phone booth and these have no effect on him at all? No. No. Paul knew today could be the last day. Came pretty close several times. Today could be the last day. And that's why Paul said in Philippians 4, I press. I don't plod. I press toward the mark. Because he only knew he had today. They might be stoning him again tomorrow. In Ephesians, he says, redeem the time. So do it. We aren't here to talk about it. We're here to think about and initiate doing it. How long has it been since you held your wife's hand? Not when somebody's looking. How long has it been since you held your wife's hand? How long has it been since you put your arm around your children and said, do you love them? How long has it been since you went out at night and looked up at the sky and gazed at the stars? You need to. How long has it been since you tried something completely new? You need to. How long has it been since you remind yourself that all this is God's and thank Him for it? You need to. You need to. Don't just go through life through the motions. You only got a little bit. You're dying. You're dying. Witness family members being baptized. Swim with dolphins. That one always scares me. You know, if you're going to swim with, you know what, generally are where dolphins are. The fin ones. Sharks, okay? If I could swim as fast as a dolphin, I wouldn't be so scared of the sharks. Go on a cruise with my wife. Scrapbook all my photos. Open a bed and breakfast. Memorize favorite parts of the Bible. Those are just bits of our bucket list from Vandalia. There were some really other good ones too. And there would have been more if I'd given them more time. And sometimes they seem kind of trivial, some of them. Swimming in Jell-O, I don't know. Can you swim in Jell-O? But all these things that we're talking about doing and seeing and enjoying, God made all those, you know. He made them all for us to enjoy. In 1 Timothy, Paul tells Timothy, trust the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. And he sure did. Lots and lots and lots of things to enjoy. He gave us lots of them. He could have made life black and white. Black and white. You ever see that commercial that's on and shows the television that's black and white? Ugly. Horrible. Might cut down our TV watching. God made a beautiful place for us, and He wants us to enjoy it. So God cares what's in my bucket. He cares about all my experiences. He wants me to enjoy them. But he wants me to enjoy them in a certain way. What he really cares about is a bucket. What he really cares about is a bucket. Because no matter what experiences you have, no matter what things you do or what things you say, what shows up in heaven is you. Not all the things that have happened to you, but you. You're the bucket. God cares what's in the bucket, but he's more concerned about the effect that your hit list, your bucket list, has on you. He's more concerned about what it does to your bucket and how those experiences change who we are. So as Carter and Edward were skydiving, if they experienced the thrill of looking at the world God had made and understanding their own frailty in that situation, their own dependence in that situation, thought about how frail and dependent they were before God, that's fine. While they're looking at a mountain, they understand the majesty that God made, the power that it took to make those. It lets them affect their bucket that way, then that's fine. While they're gazing at the stars, if it affects their bucket so that they think about things more immense than themselves, then that's fine. While they're speeding that Shelby at 200 miles an hour, they think about the genius of God and being able to make a man that can take things out the ground, manipulate them, and turn them into a machine that can go 200 miles an hour, then that's fine. But all in the context of God, because it's the bucket that's important, not the stuff that's in it. You know all the stuff that's in it is just a drop in the bucket compared to what we'll experience with God's bucket. God has a great big bucket. Okay? No time limit, no money limit, no bodily limit. If you want to go see a mountain and be impressed by majesty, God has mountains that will just amaze you. If you want to see stars, God has experiences and sights in heaven that make them look like dribble. You want to feel joy, the greatest joy you've ever felt for a moment in your life will not compare to the joy that you'll feel eternally there. His bucket is huge. You know, we talk about all the things that aren't in heaven. You know, there's no breathing in heaven. No breathing in heaven, because God's going to take our breath away every minute. We're going to die. You're going to die. I'm going to die. Maybe sooner than we expect. Almost always sooner than we expect. It's happening. You're terminal. I've seen it before. You show all the signs. You're going to die. In the middle of the movie, Carter and Edwin are on top of one of the pyramids, because that's one of the things they wanted to do. They wanted to go see the pyramids. Pretty impressive structures. They're sitting, huffing and puffing after climbing up the pyramid. They're sitting on top of the pyramid, having this philosophical, somewhat deep conversation, and suddenly Carter looks over at Edwin and he says, "You know, the Egyptians have a very beautiful concept of life after death, of heaven. The Egyptians say that you die and you get to the door of heaven and they stop you and you have to answer two questions for admission. The first question is, have you had joy in your life? Edwin has to work on that one for a while. But yeah. The second is, has your life brought joy to anyone else? Isn't that interesting? Same two questions we'll get asked. Do you have joy in your life? Do you have Jesus in your life? He is pure and simple, solid, pure joy. Do you have Him in your life? Do you have joy in your life? Second question. How has your life brought joy to someone else? Has your life and the way you lived it brought Jesus into someone else's life, made it a little clearer for them, a little better for them? When we get to the doors of heaven, you better have joy. You better have joy in your life, and you better have shared joy. I don't know when that's going to be. I'm awful predicting. But other times I get pretty good. You know, in medicine, we deal with percentages, statistics. I always tell people that statistics in medicine don't mean a whole lot. I use the example that if one out of a million people walk out and out in front of my office after being seen and get hit by a bus, only one in a million people get hit by a bus in front of my office. But the one's just as dead. And if you're the one, ain't good. Statistically, someone in here is not going to be here a year from now. Maybe more than one someone. Now, I'm not very good at picking out who it is. In fact, I'm horrible. But I can tell you that you all are dying. Find the joy. Find the joy. We'll offer the invitation as we stand and sing the closing song.